Back on Downtown, it's 4:37 here on a Wednesday afternoon. Time for this week's Sports Lit 101 with Bruce Pratt. Talking Yankees this week. We'll allow it. The Red Sox are terrible, so we'll allow it, yes.
Well, we're talking Yankees, but we're talking about their place in popular culture. And much like the Celtics or the Canadians, the Patriots in football, any team that's had a long period of dominance will leave behind, even when that's gone, a kind of a legacy. What's really interesting is that the first essay in this book, and these are collected by David Crowell. He did not write the two we're going to talk about today, is that, again, I grew up a Yankees fan. I've seen Pride of the Yankees a number of times. But what I didn't know about that movie would fill a library. For instance, I learned that the speech that Gary Cooper gives as Lou Gehrig in the movie is a rewrite of Gehrig's speech to move the phrase "the luckiest man on earth" to the end and not at the beginning. I did not know that. I knew that the movie was a different speech, but it's ranked number 22 on the American Film Institute's list of most inspiring films. Now, would it inspire this generation if they saw it, or would they think it's hokey? Would they think, you know, what's this all about? Well, you then can begin to realize that hockey is associated with the Montreal Canadiens on a high level all the time. They haven't won the Cup since 1976, okay? But people think of the Blue, Blanc, and Rouge, right? The Yankees haven't won but one World Series in the century, yet the names Ruth and Gehrig and DiMaggio and Berra and Mantle, and you go on and on and on, are part of the even people that had never had a chance to see them, whose grandparents didn't see them. I mean, I didn't see Lou Gehrig play. My dad did, you know, my folks did. But what is really interesting is it was nominated, Pride of the Yankees, this is an article by Janine Basinger, was nominated for 11 Oscars. Best Picture, Best Overall Screenplay, Best Cinematography, Best Interior, Art Direction, Best Sound Recording, Best Film Editing, Best Actor, Best Supporting Actress. And it won also in the category of Film Editing. And it was, at the time, the perfect kind of Hollywood movie. Because we had a couple of things. Hollywood movies, you remember, married couples had to have twin beds in their room, right? Hollywood at that time was so influenced by censorship and by the Catholic Church's censorship and by...
the production code.
Production code and all the moral rearmament people like that. They were making movies to be the way people wanted things to be. And what the Pride of the Yankees did, and I didn't think about this so much till I was reading this, is that's exactly how it's not supposed to happen, right? Gehrig is a shy kid. His mother doesn't want him to play baseball. He has some immigrant family. He ends up going to Columbia University, Ivy League school, becoming, according to Bob Ryan anyway, and I never argue with Bob, the greatest all-time first baseman, if you look at all the stats and stuff. Has a great run with the Yankees, starts out as a close friend of Babe Ruth, though they become somewhat estranged, and is the guy known as the Iron Man. He plays, you know, all these games, and so finally one day he can't because he has ALS. He's such a huge figure in American sports that people refer to ALS not as amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, but as Lou Gehrig's disease. You got to remember that this movie came out within 7 months of the end of World War II. And America was looking for good time stories, and they weren't really looking for stories that hit them hard. And so that while most reviewers liked the movie, there were some that didn't. Interesting thing is, do you know who was supposed to get the job before Gary Cooper?
I have read this somewhere along the way, but I can't remember.
Well, I had read it too, and the reason we don't remember is I can't think of anyone less likely to play Lou Gehrig than Spencer Tracy.
Oh, right, yeah.
Just, you know, it makes no sense to me. And Cooper, at the time, was ranked as the top actor, or in the top 10 in box office in 36, 37, 41, 42, 49, 51, and 57. That's a long time to be at the top of your game. I mean, especially at a time when Hollywood put out a lot more movies than they do today.
Right.
At the time, Gehrig was one of the first ball players, though it was true for Ruth and a few others, that people saw could be in films as a career when baseball was over. Mm. Of course, it didn't work out for him. It didn't really work out well for Ruth. He was an okay actor at times. But the interesting side story is how much the actress Teresa Wright had to learn and had to work with Lou Gehrig's widow. And Mrs. Gehrig had a lot to do with this movie, which I was surprised by. She didn't have a yay or nay on anything, but she did do a lot to talk about their relationship. You know, they were young sweethearts. They married, when he was still pretty young. And the other thing is there's other star power in that movie. A lot of people may only remember Walter Brennan as from The Real McCoys, if you're old enough to remember that show. But Walter Brennan was a really good actor. He was in a tremendous number of movies. He had won, Cooper had just won the 41 Oscar for Sergeant York.
Yeah, Walter Brennan, I think, won 2 or 3 Oscars for Best Supporting Actor.
He did. He did. And that's so that they brought a lot of what was considered star power to this movie. But here's what's interesting. People didn't get to see Lou Gehrig because this is mostly before people had TVs. And so their idea of Lou Gehrig were pictures they saw in newspapers or newsreels
right.
when they went to the movies. So they had when they had to get Cooper to look as much as possible like Gehrig, and not a spitting image, but they do share some similarities. And it was a movie that they wanted to work the sex appeal angle of the stars, but they also wanted to be very careful that they didn't run afoul of the Yankees either.
Right, right.
And it's a really interesting story. Gary Cooper was batted the wrong way and threw the wrong way from
right.
there.
So they had to, if I remember the story, they had him. They made a reverse image uniform, had him run to third base and go around the bases backwards, and then they flipped the film image to make him look left-handed.
Exactly. And they also taught him to throw and catch with the opposite hand
wow.
well enough that they could make it work. But here's the reason he had trouble with that, throwing the ball anyway. The countless falls I had taken as a trick writer had so ruined my right shoulder I couldn't raise my arm above my head. Lefty O'Doul, later manager of the Oakland Ball Club, came down to help me out. You throw a ball, he told me after studying my unique style, like an old woman tossing a hot biscuit. Although many complained in 48 when Cooper was cast as Gehrig because of his lack of baseball skills, no one has seriously complained since because he did such a masterful job of doing that. You know, it's if someone was, I always can tell whether someone can play guitar or not in a movie. You know, or if you see their hands and then they look away from one hand to the other, whatever, you can tell. I had no idea when I saw Pride of the Yankees, and I was a kid, right? That Gehrig had those kinds of those issues. The other thing was they had to fill Yankee Stadium for some of the scenes.
I couldn't do that with CGI back then.
No. So what they had to do was they had to give waivers from the Screen Actors Guild to allow non-union people.
Oh, wow.
Because they couldn't pay. If they had to pay scaled to, 10,000 people, they had to sprinkle in the right places, the stadium, it wouldn't work. And years later, Sam Goldwyn said the most difficult aspect of creating the screenplay for Pride of the Yankees was to, quote, watch my baseball so that it didn't get the better of my of the personal story. Paul Gallico was brought in, great writer, to work on it later. There were a lot of just really interesting aha moments for me in reading this. A lot about Eleanor Gehrig, but that's the first one I want to talk about today. The second one is really interesting, and we'll talk about it in depth later. But when CBS bought the Yankees, was when people said, "Oh, now it's like rooting for U.S. Steel." CBS today, the Yankees, they'll never lose another game.
And they went right in the tank.
And they went right in the tank. They went right into the dumper. And the author of this piece, it was called Lost in the Wilderness, a guy named Ron Briley. The New York Yankees corporate ownership in the anti-establishment era from 64 to 73 was really interesting because button-down CBS and Bill Paley was never going to fit in with Pepitone and the changing of right. ball play. I mean, ball players are changing at this point in time. And it's really phenomenal. Everybody, except certain major league owners, said this is going to be the ruin of baseball. It'll never be good again. They'll have every good player. And, you know, this is the reserve clause was in effect then, and there were a lot of other things that would benefit a team that had unlimited money. The problem was nobody at CBS had any idea how to run a ball game, and they ended up selling the Yankees 10 years later at a huge loss. How do you lose money on owning the New York Yankees? Yeah. Well, CBS did. So anyway, this is called The New York Yankees in Popular Culture, Critical Essays, edited by David Krell. It's from McFarland. We'll delve into a few of these over the next few months, but it's so far it's been really good.
Excellent. Well, David doesn't do anything that isn't good.
No, that's very true.
Sports Lit 101 every Wednesday here on Downtown. We'll take a little break. And when we come back, we'll wrap up the first hour. In hour two, singer, songwriter, radio host Lisa Loeb will visit with us. We'll have a look at the good, the bad, and the ugly, the calendar, the birthday list, and more. In the second hour of a Wednesday Downtown.
Hi, I'm Carlos Indiana. You're here with Downtown with Rich Kimball. Thank you for listening, and stay precious.
Hold on, nothing's the same. Tell me why I feel this way. Not gonna be worth living without you. Oh, 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 oh. I've been the pretender, but now that's gone.
Feel more confident and in control of your financial life. Ameriprise Advisors can work with you to provide personalized, goal-based advice based on your short and long-term goals. Plus, you can track your investments and financial solutions with our digital tools and regular meetings. Call Ameriprise Private Wealth Advisor Michael Toole at 207-307-7718. That's 207-307-7718. Office is located at 23 Water Street, Suite 405, Bangor, 04401. Ameriprise Financial Services, LLC, member FINRA and SIPC.
Sweats Tire is a family-owned business serving the community since 1966 with a wide variety of tires and automotive repair you can depend on. Generations of customers have counted on them to help make the best decisions for all their vehicles. Sweats stocks a variety of tires from industry-leading brands like Michelin, BF Goodrich, Uniroyal, Continental, and Firestone, and has the services to help you get the most out of your tires. Sweats Tire, serving you from two locations, 451 Hogan Road and 358 State Street in Bangor.
At Bangor Dental Associates, their top priority is helping you achieve and maintain a beautiful, healthy smile. They offer a full range of services, including dental implants, porcelain veneers, tooth-colored fillings, and teeth whitening using the Opalescent system. Using CEREC technology, they can create customized ceramic crowns in a